Good afternoon, members of the court. I'm Kathy Rotier, and I'm here on behalf of defendant Brooke Lomas. Brooke Lomas is a young, bright, and conscientious officer with the Police Department of the City of Madison, Wisconsin. But those attributes of Officer Lomas are not what this case is about. Instead, this case is about a much more prosaic characteristic of her, and that is that she was not plainly incompetent on Sunday night, July 15, 2012, when she interacted with plaintiff Rorick Gibbs and cited him for disorderly conduct. This case is about whether Officer Lomas is entitled to qualified immunity for the action she took that night. Under our case law, the rule is that qualified immunity affords protection to all, but the plainly incompetent are those who knowingly violate the law. There's no evidence in this record, there's no suggestion by anybody that she knowingly violated the law. So the only potential for stripping her of her qualified immunity is if plaintiff Rorick Gibbs proves that she was plainly incompetent on that night in July 2012. I am going to get some water.
Okay, that's fine, sure. You can bring the pitcher with you if you'd like.
What's this plainly incompetent argument you're making? What's this plainly incompetent? Is that a factor in qualified immunity?
Yes, it is. I mean, the case law says that an officer is stripped of qualified immunity only if there is proof, and it's the opposing party's burden to prove it, that she was plainly incompetent.
It's a two-step process,
right? Well, there is first, are you talking, Your Honor, about the probable cause analysis, and then whether there's a constitutional violation, and then whether the officer is entitled to qualified immunity?
Right.
You can do either step, one or the other. It used to be under Saucier that you had to do the first analysis first and then go to the second step, and now you don't under Pearson. So in this case, because the district court decision from which we've appealed said that in fact no reasonable officer could have done what Officer Lomas did, that's a heck of a thing to say about Officer Lomas. So I take great umbrage at that on her behalf, and I wish to show that she was not acting plainly incompetent that night. She was doing what an officer should do in responding to a dispatch call. Officer Lomas was not the only officer responding to the dispatch call of a man with a gun at Dexter's Pub on North Street in Madison. By the time she arrived at the parking lot there, Officer Lomas had already contacted the complaining witness to gather more information. That's good. That's what an investigating officer should do. She was told by Catherine Gruchow, the complaining witness, that she and her husband, who was in the car and driving, had both seen a man in a Jeep holding a gun unholstered up in the air by his head, not once but twice. And she saw that he had accelerated rapidly from a stop sign and he was driving badly, speeding very fast, she said. Such they were concerned enough, and we know they were alarmed because they determined to take their vehicle and follow the Jeep so they could see the license plate number well enough to be able to inform the police and give the police the correct information. That's what Officer Lomas knew when she arrived at Dexter's Pub. When she arrived there, she was not the first police officer on the scene. Sergeant Brian Cheney was already there. He is higher ranking than she is. Another police officer, Sarah Blosflug, was also there. The three of them got together because you have the report of a man with a gun going into a bar. And the report from dispatch, if you listen to the dispatch call, and it's in the record, says suspect with gun, complainant thinks he is in the bar with the gun. So that is a violation of Wisconsin law, 941.237, and it gives the officers reason for very valid concern about their safety, the safety of anybody else in that parking lot, the safety of anybody else in that bar. So they knew at the get-go that she didn't know whether he was in the bar armed, but she had reason to suspect it, and she had reason to act cautiously as a result of that. She could take into account the totality of the circumstances, that he'd been seen driving on Madison streets with an unholstered gun raised in the air near his head. Why do you do that if it's not for a malicious purpose? The disorderly conduct statute, which has been amended in Wisconsin effective November 1, 2011, says that merely loading, carrying, or going forward with a gun is not enough for a disorderly conduct charge. But that new subsection begins with a very important qualifying phrase that says, unless there are other circumstances that suggest a malicious or criminal intent on the part of the person to be charged, the mere carrying or going forward with a gun is not enough for a disorderly conduct charge. Here there was more. That first qualifying paragraph or phrase is designed to keep officer discretion in the mix. That's why when she looked at the totality of the circumstances, it was apparent to her, as it was apparent to Sergeant Cheney, with whom she conferred throughout this entire process, and the entire process was about 44 minutes if you look at the incident report and do the timeline, that there was a violation of the disorderly conduct statute, as that statute has been interpreted numerous times in the state of Wisconsin. The conduct of the driver of that Jeep, who turned out to be Rorick Gibbs, was otherwise disorderly in that it had a tendency to disturb or upset the public. And he was not exempted from the disorderly conduct statute by subsection 2. The point that I'm trying to make here is that this subsection 2 of the disorderly conduct statute is a new feature of Wisconsin law. It has not been judicially construed yet. It was first effective November 1, 2011, and this incident between Officer Lomas and Rorick Gibbs occurred on July 15, 2012, 8.5 months later. It's not self-effectuating. There are words in there that are not defined, and they look like normal English words. Everybody should understand what they mean, but that's not what happens when lawyers get at it. We fight about what words mean. That's what we do. In fact, if there's a case called State v. Fisher, a 2006 decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, considering the question of whether Wisconsin's then a ban on concealed carry was valid in light of the Wisconsin constitutional provision that recognizes the right to bear and carry arms. And the court said that the phrase going armed with had been construed in a list of cases going back over 70 years. So even words as simple as that can be fodder for much argument and certainly not something that an officer on the beat would understand a priori as she's dealing with a situation like this at Dexter's Pub in July of 2012. The fact that her interpretation of what should be done was supported by Sergeant Cheney, together they decided that the proper action was to cite Mr. Gibbs for a violation.
Were either of the other two officers sued?
No.
Was there a reason ever given?
No reason was ever given. And in the district court, in my judgment, takes something of a pot shot against the City of Madison Police Department, saying, well, if two of these people got it wrong, then the city's not educating them well enough or training them on this new sea change in the law that makes these actions so unreasonable as to make Officer Lomas plainly incompetent. I think that's unnecessary, inappropriate in the context of this case, and in fact, not conversant with the facts. There's one other thing I want to mention, the U.S. Supreme Court case, Ashcroft v. Al-Kid. It's interesting because it's a recent case, and in it the court says that qualified immunity is available unless every reasonable police officer in the same circumstances would have known that what was being done by the officer in question was unlawful. Clearly, we do not have that here. The officers on the scene together decided that what was done was the appropriate thing to do.
Does it make any difference whether it's a real gun or a fake gun, like in this case?
It makes a difference to the applicability of subsection Section 2 of the disorderly conduct statute, because I don't think that statute can be read to apply to facsimile guns. There is a separate statute in Wisconsin, 941-2965, that applies specifically to facsimile guns and makes the display of facsimile guns in an alarming way unlawful.
Well, but did Lomas know it was a fake gun?
I'm sorry?
Did Lomas know it was a fake gun?
Lomas did not know it was a fake gun until after the investigation had taken place in the parking lot. So at first they treated this as they should, as if this is a man with a gun. I mean, the real danger is a gun's going to shoot somebody or cause mayhem. So they were approaching it with that in mind. After the investigation and after they actually secured the evidence of the gun, they saw that it was an airsoft gun. So I don't think that's subject to subsection 2. But even if it had been a real gun, subsection 2 would not bar a disorderly conduct charge because there were circumstances that suggested a malicious intent, or at the very least, it was not settled law that driving fast on a city street with a gun held up in the air by your head would somehow be exempted from a disorderly conduct charge. And I see my time is up.
Thank you, Ms. Rotier. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's Rotier.
Rotier, okay, thank you.
You can take the water back with you.
Unless Mr. Monroe wants water.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, John Monroe for the plaintiff appellee, Rorick Gibbs. This is a case where an officer knew too little too late.
Why was she the only one sued?
Well, because she was the arresting officer, and contrary to what Ms. Rotier said, there wasn't any conference among the officers before the arrest was made. Officer Lomas arrived on the scene. Mr. Gibbs was frisked. He was handcuffed. He was put in the squad car immediately. There was no conference until after the arrest, and that's really what the problem is here, that the arrest was made immediately, and then the investigation ensued. Officer Lomas arrested Mr. Gibbs immediately, and then her investigation that occurred after the fact resulted in multiple theories of how she might have justified arresting Mr. Gibbs in the first place. But the problem is she can only rely on the facts that she knew at the time of the arrest. And here's what she knew. A person matching Mr. Gibbs' description was seen driving with a gun in his hand, up in the air, and what the caller said, you can hear it on the 911 call, is kind of like at his side. And she also said he was pointing it at the ceiling. Mr. Gibbs accelerated quickly from a stoplight, and this is the only thing reported to the officer that constituted, quote, driving badly. There wasn't any talk of whether
what
he might
have... What was he doing holding the gun up next to his head? Scratching himself or what?
Well, of course, we don't know until after the fact, but at his deposition, he said he was checking to see if there were still pellets in the magazine of the airsoft gun.
I don't understand. How do you do that by holding it next to your head while you're driving?
Well, you hold it up and look at it, and you can see there's a hollow point in the handle. There's like an open strip down, and you can see if there are pellets in the magazine or not. So he was holding it up and looking at it like this to see if there were pellets still in it. The caller said that he never threatened anyone and he never pointed the gun at anyone. And just as important as what Officer Lomas did know is what she didn't know. She did not know at the time of the arrest that it was an airsoft gun. She believed that it was...
Does that make a difference?
Pardon?
Does that make a difference?
Well, it does in some of her theories that she's come up with, like trying to apply the facsimile gun statute and saying that the new subsection 2 in the disorderly conduct statute doesn't apply because it only applies to real guns. Well, she didn't know it wasn't a real gun, so she can't rely on those things.
Yeah, but her case, the case for her is strengthened if she thought it was a real gun.
Well, I don't know that it is, Your Honor, because she arrested him immediately, and all she knew was he was driving in a car with a gun. And
yes, I know, but if she assumes from what the callers said that a gun is a gun, I never heard of an airsoft gun. So if she reasonably thinks it's a gun, I think she has probable cause to arrest him.
I disagree, Your Honor, and here's why, because Wisconsin, prior to the arrest, as several months sooner, amended the disorderly conduct statute explicitly to say that carrying a gun is not disorderly conduct.
Well, but hold on here. You cite Gonzalez and the Attorney General Advisory Memorandum, but don't you think that Gibbs's behavior was more extreme than the Gonzalez plaintiff? I mean, all he was doing was going into what was it, Home Depot or Walmart or someplace?
You went into a Walmart and a Menards store, yes, Your Honor.
Menard, it was holstered. But here, Gibbs was driving down, holding this airsoft gun in the air, and a little more, takes it a little more extreme than the Gonzalez case that you cite?
I'm not sure I'd say more extreme, but I'd say, you know, it's obviously a different fact. But the Wisconsin disorderly conduct statute says carrying a gun is not disorderly unless there's an indication of some malicious or criminal intent.
Don't you think holding a gun in the air driving down the street is kind of malicious intent, potentially?
Well, it certainly, it could be, Your Honor, but there's no evidence that in this case there was.
So you attach no significance to the fact that it wasn't a real gun?
No, because Officer Lomas didn't know it wasn't a real gun at the time.
So you think his behavior was fine, no reason for the police to be disturbed by it?
I do, Your Honor. If they wanted to respond to the call,
I would agree with that.
Well,
also, we're talking about qualified immunity. I would want a police officer to think, this is weird behavior. This is some guy with a gun doing something strange. And this person, he ought to be put under arrest, and then find out what's going on. You don't just, what do you let him get back into the car with this? He's waving a gun around, which he thinks is a real gun.
There was no report that he was waving it around, Your Honor. But there's a difference between investigating it and arresting him. I don't have any problem with if the police had wanted to respond to the call, go to the scene, talk to him, even perform a Terry stop. But that's not what they did. They immediately arrested him, and they didn't have probable cause to do so. That's what the problem is. It's entirely possible that had they done an investigation before they made an arrest, they would have determined that there's nothing to arrest him for. It's also entirely possible they would have determined that there was something to arrest him for. But none of that happened, because as soon as they got there, they arrested him. Now, as I've mentioned,
arrests must always be preceded by investigations?
No, because it's possible that the officer already has probable cause to make the arrest before any investigation is done. But that's not the case here, because all she knew was that the man was in the car with a gun and accelerated from a stoplight. That's not enough. That's not probable cause to arrest for anything.
He's not just in a car with a gun. He's holding the gun up to his head.
Well, holding up to his head sounds like it was pointed at his head.
No, that's not what I'm saying. He's holding the gun up to his head. That is very strange behavior. Now, you explained it because he could see whether he had pellets. That's fine. But you're operating on the assumption that she believed and reasonably believed that it was a real gun. If she thought someone is driving, you know, with one hand, the other hand is holding a gun next to his head, I would think you'd suspect this guy sounds nuts, right? You don't want to just talk to him, let him go. You want to conduct an investigation.
But you
don't want to conduct an investigation without having him in the police station.
I disagree with the last part of that, Your Honor. I don't think there's a problem with the investigation. She certainly could have done a Terry stop. She could have said, you were seen driving with the gun up by your head. What's going on? Why were you doing that? That didn't have to happen at the police station. That wasn't necessary. And in fact, she didn't do any investigation with him at the police station. All the investigation she did was on the scene, but after she had already arrested him. And she didn't have any probable cause to arrest him.
No, wait, you say the investigation was at the scene?
Yeah, she didn't do any further investigation after she left the scene.
So are you complaining that she conducted her investigation with him handcuffed? Is that the problem?
No, she admits that he was under arrest. As soon as she arrived
I don't understand. But as a practical matter, that means he was handcuffed, right?
Well, he was handcuffed. He was put in the back seat of the squad car, read his Miranda rights, and his car was searched over his objection. And she says the search was incident to arrest. So she's clearly saying that he was under arrest immediately when she arrived on the scene.
So how would you have handled it?
If I were the officer?
Yeah.
Well, as I said, I would have responded to the scene, told him what he'd been observed doing, and asking him to explain. I mean, that's the whole notion in Terry is if an officer believes that something may be afoot, he can briefly detain someone to find out whether there's cause to investigate further. And she could have stopped him, asked him what he was doing, why he'd been holding a gun up while he was driving. She may have been satisfied with his answer. She may not have been, but she didn't do any of that. Now, this court said in Gonzales that the legal landscape at the time in Gonzales was, quote, uncharted regarding openly carrying guns in Wisconsin. And then this court continued, until the 2011 amendment to Section 947.01. In other words, the landscape now has been charted, and the Seventh Circuit, in the Gonzales case, denied prospective relief to Mr. Gonzales in part because because the law had changed. They said he wasn't entitled to prospective relief because now the law in Wisconsin is carrying a gun isn't disorderly conduct. Officer Lomas should have been aware of that decision and known that after Gonzales, this court explained that the Attorney General in Wisconsin said that carrying a gun is not disorderly conduct. The Wisconsin legislature amended the statute to say it's not disorderly conduct, and unless there was malicious or criminal intent. Thank you, Your Honor. I'd ask that you affirm the district court.
What if someone were pointing a gun at another person, but actually not with malicious intent?
I guess I'd have to understand more of what's going on with that, Your Honor.
Suppose you're just demonstrating to a person, this is how, if you wanted to shoot someone, this was how you hold yourself, this is where you point. And some passerby sees this and calls the police and, you know, thinks it's a very dangerous situation. Would the police be entitled to arrest him after he explained he was just giving a demonstration?
After he'd explained he was giving a demonstration, I would say no, unless the other person...
Yeah. Well, I think you're wrong.
Unless the other person said, I didn't know what he was doing.
The other person says no, he's just giving a demonstration. But even though there's no malicious intent, he's going to be frightening people, and it can be quite dangerous. People run away, they run in front of a car, they think a shooting is about to... That would be reckless behavior. When you're playing with guns, you have to consider the impression you're going to make on people who see you. And it can be disorderly conduct to act in a way that, although innocent in intent, causes the kind of upset in bystanders, which is what we usually think of as disorderly conduct.
I don't disagree that the law could be written that way, Your Honor, but that's not how the Wisconsin legislature chose to write it. The legislature specifically changed the law to say it's not disorderly conduct unless there's criminal or malicious intent. And in your example, where there is no criminal or malicious intent, it's by definition not disorderly conduct.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Monroe. So, Ms. Rotier, I'll give you another minute.
Thank you. I hope to make just three brief points. First of all, on what the law says, even as amended, it says, unless other facts and circumstances that indicate a criminal or malicious intent on the part of the person apply, a person may not be charged. So it doesn't mean you have to have proof positive that there was indeed malicious or criminal intent. It says that if there are facts and circumstances that indicate it, and if you're pointing a gun at someone, that for darn sure indicates a criminal or malicious intent, and that is enough. Secondly, with regard to the sequence of events in the in the parking lot at Dexter's Pub. I would refer the court to the incident report, which is Exhibit 3 to the Rorick Gibbs deposition. This is the incident report prepared by Officer Lomas, in which, as I said at the beginning, she's a very conscientious officer. She goes through fairly painstakingly each incident, what happened at what time, and what the involvement of Sergeant Cheney was. And in that report, she said, I discussed the case with Sergeant Cheney and determined that a misdemeanor citation for disorderly conduct was appropriate. That was a joint decision they both made. And the third and last point I would make is about the case Gonzalez, which was issued by this court last year. It is an important case, but it doesn't say everything there is to be said about gun rights. It doesn't resolve qualified immunity claims. It talks about that DOJ, the Attorney General advisory, but it's an advisory. That's exactly what it is. It's trying to help local municipal police officers who are struggling to figure out in this new gun age that we live in now, with the laws changed in Wisconsin and the laws changing in many other states, how do we deal with the many man with a gun calls we get and still do the right thing for public safety while respecting newly announced and newly recognized rights to handle guns in ways that weren't allowed before. That's a very difficult tension. Police officers are still trying to figure out how to do that balance, and Officer Lomas on this particular night did the best job she could. She did a very reputable job, and she is not supposed to have qualified immunity stripped from her. So I would urge this court to reverse the decision below.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Rotier, and thank Mr. Monroe also. And the court will be in recess.